Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
I'm Tony Foreman.
And Tony, let's hear about your five favorite pastas.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about a list because I had the advantage of going second. And I was thinking, you know, where would I go for pasta? That's really kind of, it's not just like, what is the dish I remember, but where do I go? And I find myself wanting to go to different places all over Italy. There's a place in Puglia called Pietro Zito, and Puglia is famous for vegetable cooking, and this is a gentleman that has sort of a giant vegetable garden all around his restaurant. The restaurant's small. It has 60 seats. There is one seating. People sit for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours for a meal, which is, you know, you don't see it too much in the States, and the courses never stop coming. There's always an orecchietti course, the famous little scoop shape pasta that you see. And there's always some kind of house-made sausage that is involved with that pasta dish, with whatever vegetables are in season. I've had it with a sausage made with all the different lamb organ meats and zucchini flowers and saffron, you know, like the pistils, not even crushed, but the pistils.
Yeah. Well,
they kind of burst in your mouth a little bit. Just ridiculous
stuff.
Sounds
great. The nice thing about orecchiette is it holds the sauce so beautifully. It's a little, like you said, it's just like a little cup. So.
And the only, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, they make it fresh. They dry it about halfway. And this is not an egg pasta, not egg enriched. So the poor style, you know, straight dorm from the south.
Good.
And then when I think about decadent pasta, there's a restaurant. It's funny. There's a 2-star Michelin restaurant in Parma called Osteria Francescana that has a super modern interior and super jazzy place and great, you know, world class wine list and does ridiculously decadent menus in the tradition of a lot of the food from Parma. And they do, you know, a tortellini that is a very simple, classic, meat-filled. And again, this is a pasta that's sort of without a sauce. It's like filled, it's cooked just so. And there's a little garnish on the dish. There's actually pistachios garnishing the dish. Mm. And it is the force meat, you know, like out of the Middle Ages with all the organ meats and the pork and the calf's brains and some pig foot jelly inside the force meat and all
great.
That kind of stuff.
It's so great to get to eat something like that. That's so old.
I mean, you're looking at a 500-year-old dish, essentially.
Definitely. Well, you think about pasta being documented what around the 1100s, but I mean, it's obviously been done since.
Oh, the ancient. The three old pastas. To break away for 1 second on like pasta factoids.
Mm-hmm.
The three old pastas that you see in the Western Mediterranean long before Marco Polo brought, you know, what became spaghetti noodles back from China, maleratus in Sardinia and couscous in Morocco and then North Africa, and different kinds of filled pasta, essentially cannelloni that you see in Catalonia, all things that came from the Phoenicians from the eastern part of the Mediterranean. I mean, so that's the whole idea of making, you know, taking wheat and water or some other substance and making something that you cook as a noodle, as a dumpling, as some kind of a shape is something that's been done in the Mediterranean for a lot longer than just Marco Polo.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway.
Back to your favorite pastas.
There is one that does not sound Italian at all called Schlutzkrapfen.
No, that
which
does
is,
not sound Italian.
Which is the least sexy way of saying a really nice cheese ravioli.
There you go.
There's a restaurant up in the Tirol, in the Alto Adige, in the northern part of Italy that's old Austrian Empire, called the Pretzow. And Gasthaus Pretzow, their famous filled pasta is Schlutzkrapfen, which are literally, little egg pasta ravioli, essentially big triangles, filled with fresh cheese that they make and herbs from their farm, whatever herbs are in the season. And it's super aromatic. And they drop them for a minute in water, and then they heat them in butter the rest of the way.
Yeah, and it's almost very light and delicate.
Yeah, super delicate.
Yeah, they're like pillows. That's a beautiful pasta.
Super tender. And
that's
and
an amazing restaurant.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And then my other two are both Piemontese classics. What in the rest of Italy is called tagliolini, which are, you know, little tiny skinny tubes, sort of like spaghetti, in Piemontese dialect are called tagliarine. And every restaurant in Piemonte pretty much does a tagliarine, T-A-J-A-R-I-N.
Mm-hmm.
My very favorite is at Trattoria della Posta, just south of Monforte d'Alba in the Barolo zone. And that's a restaurant that has a great list, and it's a sort of great old big house of sorts. And it's a family that operates that. But their tagliarine, the sauce runs from juicier and more fresh tomato. It's just tahirin al ragu. And the ragu is always a meat sauce, and it's, you know, meat that simmered a long time in red wine, and whether it's a little roasted tomato in the wintertime or the fresh tomato in the summertime. But super, super simple. And again, cooked almost dry. Pasta number five for me, the second Piemontese, is our agnolotti dal plin. And agnolotti, literally little rectangles of filled pasta, tiny ones. Dal plin means they get a pinch, sort of a squeeze. And I'm not going to name one favorite. Almost anywhere in Piemonte, actually, if I had to name a favorite, Enzo Brezza, the famous Barolo winemaker, his mother still comes into work 2 hours a morning. She's 86 at their hotel restaurant and makes the agnolotti each day. And they serve as many as she makes. Wow, and sometimes she brings a friend, and so they have more to sell.
That's amazing.
But it's only her recipe. She won't tell anyone.
Wow.
I know that there's pork liver in there and a lot of the shoulder meat and so on and so forth.
Oh, that's
the shapes are... For the 86-year-old lady, the shapes are not perfect, but there's so much egg in the dough that she makes. I mean, it's, you know, that Piemontese dough, the egg yolks give it this like yellow, almost like the sun kind of a kind of a color. Remarkable stuff.
The chickens probably produce pretty good eggs there too, so that makes a difference.
So this is a good place to get into what kinds of pasta, because we've talked about stuff from all over and all different styles. You in the grocery store, you walk down the aisle, and what do you see?
Many different types of dried pastas.
So dried pasta.
And you might see some freshish pastas in the refrigerated section.
Yeah, dried pasta is usually not something with egg. Usually in Italy, for the most part, north to south, you think of egg pastas in the north, especially northwest of Italy and through Alpine Italy. And then once you get south of the Parma, Modena, Emilia-Romagna pretty much, once you're south of there, it's all pretty much dried pasta. And do you have a giant preference? What do you think is smart to work with at home?
I buy DiCecco pasta. It's one of my favorites. I think it's consistent, and I do like dried pasta. If I'm going to work with fresh pasta, I'm going to make it myself.
But that's a good standard you can find in an awful lot of grocery stores.
Absolutely, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with using dried pasta. Dried pasta is delicious. So, you know, either way, it's just two different things, you know, two different feelings in your mouth, two different processes, and obviously it's much easier to go buy a box of pasta. But I think also with pasta, understanding whether or not it does have egg, is it made with semolina, is it not, is it, you know, what is it made with, particularly when it's fresh, and what are your choices? I mean, are you going to put an egg in your pasta if you're making fresh, and how much egg? You know, you want to keep your pasta from sticking together, obviously, and you want to cook it properly. I mean, I think that's one of your big pet peeves is overcooked pasta, and I absolutely agree with you. You know, and I think people's palates are so looking towards something that's soft, and pasta should have texture to it.
You like making dried pasta at home, so your basic process for most dried pasta for home?
I just boil it in heavily salted water. So, you know, that's
so all your... Question one, how salty the water?
Very salty. You know, not so salty as if you were cooking a green vegetable where it should be like the sea. I mean, it is, obviously, the whole point is the pasta's absorbing the liquid. So you don't want it to be too salty. But, you know,
Not far from seawater.
Right.
Maybe Chesapeake Bay water.
Right. Yes. And, you know, and obviously you have a strainer ready to go. And, you know, you have all of, you know, if you're pre-cooking the pasta or you're about to make a dish where you're adding a sauce and then you're heating it up again later, you know, it's obviously that idea is, are you shocking it now? You know, stopping the cooking process and finishing the dish later. So that's the only other thing you really need to consider. And then you really need to put some sort of fat on it after it comes out if you're not making the dish right away, because it will stick. So putting fat oil in the water is unnecessary. It's just going to wash the water over the pasta anyway. It's not going to have that much oil left on it when it comes out. The whole point is that you would add a little dab of butter or a little bit of extra virgin olive oil or something to coat the pasta after it's drained and cooked.
So you cook it in the water. One thing that I always think of is, you know, if your total cooking time, if you think it's, say, you know, maybe your box of dried pasta says 11 minutes, and you're going to make a dish like the, you know, like the dish with the spaghetti with the clams,
right,
and garlic and all that kind of business. There are two things that are important. One is you cook the pasta until it's almost done, but not so done that it can't absorb what flavor you want it to absorb.
Mm-hmm.
If your pan with the clams has white wine and garlic that you're already, you know, have worked into that broth,
maybe a little seafood stock,
and is ready to open. If you still have to open those clams, mm-hmm. that means you have to have enough liquid in that pan to open those clams, and the pasta has to go in there hot, but you don't want the pasta to overcook. So maybe it's 6 minutes or seven
exactly.
minutes in the water.
Yeah, leave yourself some room.
And it's more al dente, and leave it room to finish in mm-hmm. the pan with everything that's flavoring it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then you keep working that. And
just
then,
don't leave yourself too much room. You know, everything can become too extreme yeah. when you're trying to teach someone how to cook.
Yeah.
You want it to be just a little bit undercooked.
You have to be sensitive through the whole stage.
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel like it's just about done in the pan, it's going to keep cooking for any time that you still have it with heat. So.
Oh, and fresh pasta just cooks so quickly. So, you know, dry pasta versus fresh is cooking time. And it also depends on is it a filled pasta or is it just, you know, fettuccine or whatever, you know, an unfilled pasta cooks
and
very quickly.
For something like that clam dish, it's funny because the olive oil that you would use and the quality of it is so important.
Definitely.
That needs to go on when it's off the fire, when that pan is not smoking hot.
Right.
You know, that literally is probably almost an interim step before you plate it. Maybe better off going onto a big bowl or something like that that's warm, not cold, and actually going ahead and serve and drizzling it with the olive oil and tossing it there, letting that absorb a little bit too, because you don't want to cook the olive oil and lose the fruitiness of that. That's the point of that,
mm-hmm.
is the fruitiness of that and the saltiness of the clams.
Well, and I also know you make a kind of wintertime tomato sauce that you like a lot. That might be nice.
Yeah, I've tried to make a tomato sauce a lot of times, impatiently and you go through the grocery store all winter long and you keep looking at things that look like tomatoes and you smell them and they smell like plastic tubs, right?
Yes.
And then miraculously, once in a while, you'll smell something in one of these little containers of tomatoes, whether they're Campari tomatoes or grape tomatoes or who knows where they're from, or it's probably somewhere in Mexico. And, you know, like last week, I found some in the grocery store that actually, you know, you pop open the edge of the little plastic container and you smell what smells like the stems of the tomatoes.
Yes, right.
You're like, wait, that might actually be a vegetable. That might actually be the fruit that it is. Yeah. So those tomatoes, you can very patiently get some flavor out of. And if you have a heavy, a very, very heavy skillet, like a creuset, something that's ceramically lined so it doesn't brown the heck out of stuff, at very low temperature, say 200 degrees, you can fill that pan with those kinds of tomatoes after washing them and drying them. And some salt, not a ton. A little bit of olive oil, a little bit of red wine, a tiny little bit of garlic. When I say garlic, not garlic that is hot and sort of nasty, but literally like one sweet clove, put the entire one in there. One, like half of a jalapeno or something like that, and a little drizzle of honey. You toss everything in that pan, let it warm up slightly on the burner. Do not burst those tomatoes. They need to be thin-skinned tomatoes, and then you put them in the oven once they're just a little warm, when they sizzle a tiny little bit on the range, put them in the oven, and it's literally like 6 to 8 hours in a 200-degree oven to get them to essentially melt together. It's not a roasted flavor. What happens is the skins of the tomatoes get super sweet, and you maybe work them once every 2-3 hours. When I say work them, it's gently, even with like a wooden spatula or something, just kind of move things around
mm-hmm.
so the juices mix and some of those little flavoring agents that you have in there affect each other.
So how dry are they by the time you're done?
They're not that dry.
So
they're still really...
They're pretty moist.
They're pretty juicy.
Mm-hmm.
And the skins have kind of melted into nothing and they kind of become one with the flesh. Like, you know, you did it patiently enough with if the skin of the tomato and the flesh of the tomato kind of melted into one...
Sounds
you know,
good.
Sweet sort of substance,
mm-hmm.
And then to finish that as a sauce, I always take a ball jar, all those tomatoes, and give a little more splash of red wine in the pan. Put all of that into a ball jar, a lot of fresh basil, whatever the most aromatic is that you can find, more good olive oil, and while it's warm but not hot, put the top on that ball jar and shake the bejesus out of it. And
cooking term.
You have, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it, bejesus is sometimes used as a cooking term, casually in my house.
Very good.
But that's fun stuff.
That's a good wintertime tomato sauce.
Fresh, I'm going to take you back to a technical question. Fresh pasta with egg, how long is it okay in your fridge, do you think?
Not very long. It will begin to oxidize. So, no, couple.
Yeah, 2 days,
yeah,
maybe 3.
Yeah, maybe 2 days, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't even consider that. I would make it and... If I was making it, I would cook it.
If you're making fresh, yeah, if you're making fresh, I think that's kind of the thing.
Yeah.
The convenience of dried pasta is great,
mm-hmm.
but you have to work to develop some flavor. The fresh pasta is going to inherently have more flavor and more fat because of the egg yolk that's in there. But you have much more volatile product.
Right. Well, I think the joy of having fresh pasta is making it yourself and having that experience and learning from it and doing something creative the next time and, you know, adding spinach puree to it or adding beet puree to it or filling it with something that, you know, that you're excited about. And I think that's the fun part of making pasta. Yeah,
it's not that tough to get, whether you can get ravioli makers and things like that, but literally to roll out a sheet of pasta to an even thickness and cut it in half. And you literally can just pipe whatever the filling is that you want, whether it's, say, cheese and herbs, or pick something. You said spinach or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And you literally dot it around and fold the other sheet over top of it. And then just, you can cut yourself.
Prep it down. And you wash it, you egg wash it, and that's how it seals. And then you crimp it down with something, and that's it. It's fun to make, and it is easy to do. It's much, and you know, even at school, they made us learn how to make pasta with a rolling pin. So that you know, it's always best to learn how to do something by hand, then you begin to use a machine. Even if it's such a simple machine as a hand crank machine.
Yeah.
You know, it's you have to learn. It's like when you learn how to whip cream. We always learned how to whip things first or make mousse. You do it by hand first, and then you get to use the mixer.
Yeah, it's funny. Of all the fancy pasta machines in the world and ravioli makers and all that kind of stuff, I would much rather just make it at home on the counter and, you know, cut spaghetti
with a rolling pin
and a knife in your hands are all you need to get it done.
Mm-hmm. You're walking in the footsteps of, again, it's just, it's ancient cooking, so it's pretty cool to do.
Pretty therapeutic to do, too, I think.
I agree.
Well, when we come back, we're going to do, we'll spend a few minutes on questions and spend some time with probably my favorite of the small, more artisanal dry pasta makers in Italy is Rustichella d'Abruzzo. And we have a gentleman, Giovanni Antila, who's going to come on the air with us and answer questions about that. We thought that would be pretty interesting. So we're going to come back to a little more on pasta with Formula Wolf on Food & Wine.